When we hear news of sudden storms out on Puget Sound and recreational type sailing vessels out there, we are reminded even today that the sea represents a place of peril and danger and a place where humans are vulnerable in many ways to the elements of the seas, the oceans, and how the conditions can change so suddenly. The weather can be calm and peaceful when boats go out on the water, and yet those conditions can suddenly change. Small craft advisories, storm warnings, and people can be trapped out in those conditions, and it can be very dangerous, very life-threatening. In the book of Acts here, in Acts chapter 27, we see that Luke provided a very gripping eyewitness account of the voyage that the Apostle Paul went on here that ended in shipwreck. And yet the Apostle Paul was under the protection of God in these circumstances. And that becomes very evident. And the fact that God was working through the Apostle Paul in his life as he was a called apostle and he was living very seriously, taking that calling of God that was on him in his life to go out and preach the gospel and to be an ambassador of Jesus Christ. So the Apostle Paul has been through a lot in his life. The Lord told him many things that he would suffer, and yet he would be a bear witness before kings and before governors, and all of that is coming true in the Apostle Paul's life. He was, as we open here in chapter 27, we reflect that Paul, several attempts have been made on his life. He has been held now as a prisoner for over 2 years in the Roman prison, and during that he has appealed to Caesar. He made an appeal to Caesar to be taken there for his case to be tried in a court where he was more confident that he would receive a fair hearing and that his life could be exonerated and he could be declared innocent. All points to the fact that he is innocent. And that decision has been confirmed by two Roman governors already. In Jerusalem, the centurion in Jerusalem, Claudius Lysias, and then before Felix, before Festus, and even before King Agrippa in Caesarea during his imprisonment, Apostle Paul has been declared innocent. But now he is going to be going on this voyage, and it remains to be seen if, even though he has survived the human attacks that have been made and all of the plotting and illegal scheming that has been done to try to put him to death, he has survived all of those things with God's protection, but how will he fare in the sea and the stormy seas that are awaiting him as he sets out here on this voyage? We know that audiences have been captivated for throughout history by stories of shipwrecks and novels and movies and news stories have been just captured the attention of the public. About or surrounding these stories that have been true accounts of shipwrecks at sea. So We're now going to enter into this account that is provided for us by Luke, by his inspiration. And it is a very dramatic account that is given here. And in this, he gives some of the most accurate details of shipping and navigation of the seas in the first century of any historical account that has survived down to the present time. So it's very valuable information that is given on many different levels. But I think more than anything else, as we look at the Apostle Paul and his conduct, his faith, and his concern for other people, how he lived his life for the betterment of those around him, that really stands out in this account, in my estimation of what the lesson that we can really take from it today is, to pay attention carefully to how the Apostle Paul conducted himself and the impact that his life had on other people. So, beginning in Acts 27 and beginning with verse 1, let's read together. He says, "And when it was decided that we should sail to Italy, they delivered Paul and some other prisoners to one named Julius, a centurion of the Augustan regiment. So, entering a ship of Adramidium, we put to sea, meaning to sail along the coast of Asia. Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, was with us. And the next day we landed at Sidon, and Julius treated Paul kindly and gave him liberty to go to his friends and receive care." We see right off at the beginning here that Luke is present in this account. So Luke is one of the companions here that is on this journey with Paul, and he is able to provide this eyewitness account of everything that took place. It becomes evident, he is reminded here, that Paul is a prisoner. They delivered him and other prisoners to a centurion, Julius. And so here again, he is in the custody of the Romans. He is being transported to Rome, to Italy, for this appeal that he has made to Caesar. And they select a ship here that is sailing up the coast and is going to stay inland. It is going to stay right along the coast. It is a ship of Adramidium. And if you look at the top of this map that I have shown you, you can see that where Adramidium, this ship is from that city, far up in the north. It's near Troas, and this ship is on its way home, basically, from Egypt, most likely. It's a grain ship. And so as they leave here, it says, "We put to sea," meaning to sail along the coast of Asia, "Aristarchus, a Macedonian, with us, and the next day we landed at Sidon." It was about 70 miles to Sidon, and it took them about one full day to get there. So it's moving very slowly, about 3 knots an hour, we might say, and it's just the current that is carrying this ship along. And when they arrive at Sidon, the centurion shows kindness to Paul, and he allows him to go and visit with his friends. There were Christians here that we've already learned about in the city of Sidon. We also are told that traveling with Paul are two of his friends here. Of course, Luke being one of those, but also Aristarchus, who is a Macedonian from Thessalonica. So he's a fellow Christian. Paul is not by himself all alone on this trip. He does have the companionship of some fellow Christians, and just think about how valuable that is and how encouraging that is, that he did have some fellow Christians with him on this trip. But he's being shown kindness and the recognizing that he is a Roman citizen. He is innocent. Still, there is no charge that has been proven against him. So the Roman centurion extends to him a kindness, and he is given some liberties that other people are not given. So now, as the journey continues there, we begin to see that as these currents are carrying the ship along, they stay along the inside, close to shore on most of this trip. But now in verse 4, when we had put to sea from there, we sailed under the shelter of Cyprus because the winds were contrary. And when we had sailed over the sea, which is off Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra, a city of Lycia. There the centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing to Italy, and he put us on board. So they go up along the coast here, but they begin to encounter contrary winds. And as the ship here goes around the island of Cyprus here, those winds begin holding the ship back, making it much more difficult for them to proceed along this course here. It indicates that they went under the shelter of the island. And that is something that, as you navigate out in the seas like this, I'm sure becomes an important thing, is to navigate through the winds of the passages that are out there. So rather than going around the shortest direction, and that would have been more like a direct route to Myra, they went around the shelter, protecting by the winds, and then try to make the shortest route across the open sea that they could do. But they did make it to Myra, and was a large port there along the coast. And they changed ships from this one ship that they had started, and they got on a different ship that was from Alexandria. Now, this ship was headed for Italy, and it was also a grain ship. These ships that they were riding on in this trip, they were not passenger ships. They really did not have passenger ships in the first century. And for people like this, even soldiers many times, they would book a passage on a grain ship or some other commercial ship that was carrying the cargo. And that is what they switched over here to, this other ship that is going to Italy. That is where their destination is. But these winds are blowing, a prevailing wind that is coming off the northwest here. And that's the opposite direction to what they are trying to sail here. Now, these ships that they are on, these grain ships, they do not navigate out in the open waters very well, especially if the winds are blowing contrary, like it says. That a smaller sailing vessel is able to tack into the wind. It can zigzag back and forth and be able to still go opposite to the wind. But these ships were not designed that way. And it was very difficult when they hit these kind of winds to be able to make any progress. So it says in verse 7, when we had sailed slowly many days and arrived with difficulty off Cnidus, the wind not permitting us to proceed, we sailed under the shelter of Crete off Salmone. Passing it with difficulty, we came to a place called Fair Havens near the city of Lycia. So now, as they left from Myra in this Alexandrian ship, they again encounter these difficult winds here that are coming in the opposite direction to what they're trying to go. And so instead of going the normal route, which would be going around the north side of Crete on a direct line to Italy, they elect to go around the south side of the island. And they are again using these islands to shelter them and get to make better time that way and avoid the difficulty of the winds that are holding back on the ship. So they go around the islands here that are mentioned off Salmon, and they come to this port called Fair Havens. Now this is located on the south side then of Crete. And Crete is the largest island in this part of the Mediterranean Sea. It's a large island. But they go around on the south side and they stopped at the port of Fair Havens. So it says in verse 9, when much time had been spent and sailing was now dangerous because the fast was already over, Paul advised them, saying, "Men, I perceive that this voyage will end with disaster and much loss, not only of the cargo and ship, but also our lives." Nevertheless, the centurion was more persuaded by the helmsman and the owner of the ship than by the things spoken by Paul. And because the harbor was not suitable to winter in, the majority advised to set sail from there also, if by any means they could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete opening toward the southwest and northwest, and winter there. Now, he begins to talk here about the season of the year that is getting to be the dangerous time for them to be able to make this journey. And it says, because the fast was already over. This is referring to the Day of Atonement of the Jews. And it took place in early October. So Luke is pointing out something very important here, that it's getting late in the year for them to be making this trip. If you look on the sailing of the Mediterranean Sea, it's considered that the time of year, the ideal sailing time, is May the 15th through September the 15th. And then from September the 15th through November the 15th is considered very risky and hazardous to even go out. But then from November the 15th through May the 15th or March the 15th of the next year, through those winter months, there is no sailing. There was no sailing on the Mediterranean in the first century during those months. So they are getting late into the year here when this is happening. It's early October. They are already in a time of year that the winds can be tricky. They can come up. There's going to be a lot of weather conditions that they're going to encounter if they go out. So Paul gives some good advice here. He speaks up and he speaks to the captain, to the centurion. And he said, "I perceive that this voyage will end with a disaster and much loss, not only the cargo, but also our lives." So he's advising, he's giving them some advice here that it would be the wise thing to do to stay here for the winter. And yet they do not listen to his advice. The centurion was more persuaded by the helmsman, the owner of the ship, than by the things spoken by Paul. So he listened to the experts. He trusted in their advice that, no, it's better for us to try to go on a little further. And it said, because the harbor was not suitable to winter in, the majority advised to set sail from there also, if by any means they could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete opening toward the southwest and the northwest, and winter there. So it was only 40 miles from Fair Havens to Phoenix, this other harbor, and they really did have a better harbor there. So they all got together and they discussed it, and they came to the conclusion, let's go on and we should be able to make this other harbor, and we will stay the winter there. So they have already made the decision at this time that they are going to stay the winter in Crete. Just a matter of finding the harbor that during the winter months, as the waves are pounding in at times, they want to be in a harbor that is sheltered. There's safety there for the ship because they are concerned about the grain. They're concerned about the cargo and the ship being able to be safe. So they made a decision here. They ignored the advice of the Apostle Paul. Now, the Apostle Paul, keep in mind, he's a very experienced traveler on these seas at this time. Now, in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, which the Apostle Paul had already written the letter of 2 Corinthians before this happens here in the book of Acts. And in 2 Corinthians 11, he talks about here some of the things that he had endured and experienced. He said, three times I was beaten with rods, once I was stoned, three times I was shipwrecked, and a night and a day I have been in the deep, in journeys often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen. And he goes on to describe many of these things that he had experienced even at that time. But he had been in three shipwrecks already, and he had spent a night and a day out in the deep of the water just trying to survive. So when he gave this advice to the men of the ship, he said, I don't think it's wise for us to go on any further. We should just stay here. He knew what he was talking about, and they really should have listened to him, but they took the view that what does a rabbi, what does he know about these things? And so they went on and tried to make it to the next port. So it says here that as you look at the map here of Crete, it's Fair Havens. It goes around a point there. And that is very tricky when you are out there in these kind of conditions and you go around that tip of the island, which they would have to do. They're going to go out and try to make this other port there that was 40 miles away, basically, at Phoenix. It says, when the south wind blew softly, supposing that they had obtained their desire, putting out to sea, they sailed close by Crete. But not long after, a tempestuous headwind arose called Euracleidon. So when the ship was caught and could not head into the wind, we let her drive. So they get up one morning here, and it is a nice, gentle south wind is blowing. And it looks like an ideal conditions to make this last little piece of the leg to get over to the better port. And so they think it's safe. They get out. They put out to sea. And they are staying in close along the shore. But all of a sudden, they go around this tip of the island, and this tempestuous headwind arose called Euracleidon. Now, this is a northeast wind. So it shifts. The wind totally shifted on them from this point. Now, also on this section of the island of Crete is Mount Ida. Mount Ida is 8,000 feet. It's the highest island on the highest mountain peak there. And the winds come down off of this mountain, apparently, into this area. So there's some factors here that as they started off, the weather was nice that day, but then all of a sudden it suddenly shifted and changed entirely. And this northeaster starts blowing down And it is blowing them out to sea, and they cannot control that. I think about when I was growing up in West Texas, we had what they would call the northern winds that would blow. And those would bring in those storms and cold weather coming in from the north. And boy, in the winter time there, a norther wind coming in, it can be freezing cold on those mornings, very, very chill mornings. But here is a northern eastern wind. It's called the northeaster, and it blows them out to sea. Everything changes. And so running under the shelter of an island called Clauda, or it can be also Cauda, we secured the skiff with difficulty. When they had taken it on board, they used cables to undergird the ship, and fearing lest they should run aground on the Sirta sands, they struck sail and so were driven. And because we were exceedingly tempest-tossed, the next day they lightened the ship. On the third day, we threw the ship's tackle overboard with our own hands. Now when neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small tempest beat on us, all hope that we should be saved was finally given up. Well, they began to try to use some emergency measures here. They brought the skiff, the lifeboat, in. It was being towed on behind the ship, but they secured it in with difficulty. It probably was filling up with water and maybe turned over in a storm like this. So they got that secured, and then they began to undergird the ship with cables to try to hold the stern together to keep the ship from breaking apart, lest they should run aground on the Sirta sands. Now, these are located further south, off the coast of Libya, and they are known as quicksands, and they're like a reef or an underground sandbars that run along there, and many ships have wrecked in there. So they're trying to make it through this treacherous part of the seas here. And because we were tempest-tossed, they lightened the ship. They began to throw out the tackle. They began to throw out some of the gear on board. One of the translations says they put down the anchor here, or the sea anchor. So they're using different things that they can do to try to keep the ship together, but they have no control over it at this point. They're letting it run in the gale wind. These are gale winds that are blowing. The other thing that happens when you have that gentle south wind blowing, and then the northeast wind comes down, is that it begins to turn it around here in a swirling motion, and that's how you can get the hurricanes and the other storms like this. So it's a very high winds. It's like a hurricane, gale force winds that they are experiencing. And for many days now, neither sun nor stars appear. And keep in mind, the only way they have of navigating here in the first century is through the stars at night and the heavenly bodies, and also through landmarks that they can see in the distance. They can navigate through the seas because they didn't have compasses, they didn't have sextants and things like that at this time, like we have modern equipment today. So once the cloud covers are totally covering and they cannot see the sun, or at night, there's no way that they can navigate and know which direction the ship is really going. Well, they're being blown here by these strong winds, and they're blown out into this part of the sea here where there is not any islands for hundreds of miles here. It's actually going to be about 475 miles to where they end up landing here on the island of Malta, and that's where the shipwreck takes place. It says, but after long abstinence from food, this is verse 21, then Paul stood in the midst of them and he said, men, you should have listened to me and not have sailed from Crete and incurred this disaster and loss. And now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For there stood by me this night an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve, saying, do not be afraid. Paul, you must be brought before Caesar. And indeed, God has granted you all those who sail with you. Therefore, he said, take heart, men, for I believe God that it will be just as it was told us. However, we must run aground on a certain island. So here the Apostle Paul, he begins to give them encouragement at this point. He has seen the vision has been revealed by the angel of God, the God I serve. And he said, I believe God that it will be as it was said to me, that no loss of life. God has granted me all of your lives with mine because I am a mission to go to Rome and appear there. And God is protecting me in these things. Well, it says, when the 14th night had come, as we were driven up and down the Adriatic Sea, about midnight the sailors sensed they were drawing near some land. And they took soundings, and they found it to be 20 fathoms. That's about 120 feet. And then when they got a little further, they took soundings, and they found it to be 15 fathoms. That's about 90 feet. Then, fearing lest we should run aground on the rocks, they dropped four anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come. So here they are, and they begin to sense, the sailors sense they are nearing land. Usually when that happens, they are maybe only a half a mile or less from shore. And there's rocks, there is dangers there that they have to be aware that they can be crashed on the rocks, they can lose everything here. So they began to put down the anchors. They're trying to hold the ship back and throw out more of the things in the sea. And in verse 30 it says, as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship, when they had let down the skiff into the sea under pretense of putting out anchors from the prow, Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved. Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the skiff and let it fall off. The sailors, at this point, they were planning to make their getaway and get in the lifeboat and make it to shore and just abandon the rest of the ship. There's 276 people on this ship. And so these sailors, if they left, they are the only ones who are really the navigators are taking care of the ship. No one would else have the knowledge of doing this. And it would be basically a death sentence to the rest of them. So Paul notified the centurion and they made sure that didn't happen. The soldiers kept them from escaping that way. Verse 33, and as day was about to dawn, Paul implored them all to take food, saying, today is the 14th day. You have waited and continued without food and eaten nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take nourishment, for this is your survival, since not a hair will fall from the head of any of you. What an amazing statement. Not a hair. That is a proverbial expression, basically. But you're all going to be safe. No harm is going to come. We need to stay on the ship, in other words. But he said, you need to eat some food. Let's have some nourishment here. You haven't eaten anything for 2 weeks while this storm has been going. All we can do is think about the survival. And so when he said this, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And when he had broken it, he began to eat. Then they were all encouraged and also took food themselves. And in all, we were 276 persons on the ship. 276 persons. They're all equals, in other words, at this point. It doesn't matter. 276 persons on this ship together. So when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship and threw out the wheat into the sea. So that wheat is a commodity. It's a liability at this point. They get rid of it. And verse 39, when it was day, they did not recognize the land. But they observed a bay with a beach onto which they planned to run the ship if possible. And they let go the anchors and left them into the sea. Left them in the sea, meanwhile loosing the rudder ropes. And they hoisted the mainsail to the wind and made for shore. But striking a place where two seas met, they ran the ship aground, and the prow stuck fast and remained immovable. But the stern was being broken up by the violence of the waves. So some of these parts of Luke's account are so clear that it doesn't really need any comment. Here is the bay today of, it's called St. Paul's Bay in Malta. And it's believed on good evidence this is the area where this shipwreck happened, where they came to land here in this early morning hours of the 14th day. And it says the soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim away and escape. But the centurion, wanting to save Paul, kept them from their purpose and commanded that those who could swim should jump overboard first and get to land. And the rest, some on boards and some on parts of the ship. And so it was that they all escaped safely to land. What an amazing thing that Paul's prediction here came true. Exactly true. That the angel, he said, told me last night that God has given all of your lives into my hand. And you will not die. You will survive. And that's exactly what turned out to be the case here. So we see the providence of God. God's providence working in this storm, protecting the Apostle Paul and his life, because God has already said that he will appear in Rome. But all the other people on board the ship, their lives also are secured because of the words that have been given to the Apostle Paul. Now think about Paul living his life through this experience, through this ordeal, and how he still is ministering to the people around him. He is thinking of them with kindness and love and compassion and wisdom. And as he goes through these dark hours of this storm that are unfolding, he speaks up and he gives them encouragement. He gives them hope during this time. And he encourages them through his own example. Look, I'm going to have some food. I'm going to eat. I'm going to get some nourishment here so that we can come through this together. And as a result, every single life was saved. Do you think that by the end of these 2 weeks that many of those people on board that ship were coming to have a respect for this man of God? This prisoner of Rome that has lived in a way before their very eyes, in such a way with courage and wisdom that they listen to him now with new respect as they arrive here on the shores of the island. And not one single person is lost in this terrible storm and shipwreck. What are the lessons for us? Well, I believe that if we try to put ourselves in those similar circumstances, if possible, translated over into your life where we're living today, would you be the person that the Apostle Paul was being to those around you to have an impact for encouragement and showing an example of his faith and his courage? I believe God, what he said is true. And he's the one I serve. He's the one I belong to. That had an impact on the people around. Are you that person today in your life that has that kind of faith and that kind of example that you're living, that is able to minister to people around you and give them hope and encouragement in the struggles that they are going through? We're going to stand and sing the invitation song. If you're subject here today in any way to Jesus, inviting us to come to Him that we might have forgiveness of our sins and be raised up to new life, we're going to stand and sing. We invite you to come.